During the Second World War, one of the few Christians' voices actively agitating against what was happening from the German perspective was a man called Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So inevitably, he was put in prison for actively rejecting Nazism. In prisons, during bombing raids, those bombs were falling, all the prisoners were generally screaming at the guards, "Get us out of here, in case the cells collapse on us." But Dietrich Bonhoeffer would just stand here like this, just believing and trusting that God governed all things to achieve his purposes. He was calmly trusting in the Lord, and this reflected in his behaviour. To him, it was not just theory that God governs all things to achieve his purposes. It was real. And what we see here in this middle part of Ruth is real faith in the difficulties and hardships of daily life. We see real faith by real people in the real promises of God. Because how we react to difficulty says quite a bit about who or what we are trusting. So let's just recap the situation of these people. If you remember back to chapter 1, we left Naomi and Ruth in a precarious situation during the time of the judges. Naomi's husband and two sons had died in the land of Moab, and Naomi returned with Ruth. In leaving the promised land, Elimelech and Naomi showed unbelief in God and his promises, particularly by marrying their sons to Moabite women, which was expressly forbidden by God. And when given the choice, though, Ruth could have then gone back to a more secure future with her own family and people and gods. But she was prepared to suffer whatever it might cost to be included in the promises of God, even though the promises to Abraham of land and descendants seemed unlikely for them individually. And this can all be summarised in the names of the characters and places. So Elimelech means "my God is king," but he denied God's kingship by leaving the place of the Lord's specific rule, the promised land. And specifically, he left Bethlehem, which means house of bread. But there was no bread because there was a famine, because they were experiencing the Lord's covenant discipline for their unfaithfulness to him. Naomi, which means pleasant or delightful, returns to the land under the hand of God's discipline in bitterness, and so renames herself Mara. She said, "Don't call me pleasant or delightful anymore, call me bitter, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." But at the very end of chapter 1, as we saw last time, there is a small glimmer of hope, because there is now food in the house of food, Bethlehem. And as we look at the text, the first thing we see in verse 1 of chapter 2 is that we're introduced to Boaz, who becomes a very important figure in this account. He is a relative of Naomi's husband's. And just be a bit careful with the text here. Look at it carefully. It literally says he is a powerful man of wealth. Now, I'm not sure why the ESV has translated this as a worthy man. I suspect it's because they've read back into it from what we know of Boaz later on in the story. But the reason it's important to understand this as mighty or powerful man of wealth is because it creates an important tension in this account. See, Boaz being powerful could actually be concerning, because it is usually the rich and powerful that oppress others, not serve them. So we're left wondering, what impact will someone like Boaz have in this situation? There would almost be an expectation here of people reading this for the first time that this will make their situation even worse. So Ruth and Boaz already have a foot on their neck, and usually people like Boaz would exploit them so that their faces are ground into the dirt. So in verse 2, we're quickly reminded again of these women's precarious situation. Ruth had to go and glean, which means basically just going round after harvesters picking up any leftovers. This was how God told people to provide for the poor and the foreigner back in Deuteronomy 24. A requirement of landowners was that they should not go back to get the leftovers themselves, but to leave that for the poor. And this is, of course, a reflection of God's concern for the needy and the widow. And because Ruth and Naomi were poor, this is how they had to survive, because they couldn't just phone up Centrelink with their feet on the sofa and get money put in their account. And verse 3 is very significant. The NIV says, as it turned out, she found herself working. But literally what it says is, she happened to happen upon. This is a Hebrew way of saying there is no such thing as accident, coincidence, good luck, fortune, or fate. She found herself in the field of Naomi's rich and powerful relative Boaz by the providence of God. Providence is a word that's not used much these days because we prefer words like luck, fate, fortune. But it's an important word because it means that God governs every single event of this world, every circumstance, moment by moment, to achieve his purposes. Nothing that happens in this world is outside of God's control or purpose. Now, we don't know what human factors were involved in Ruth's choice of this field, because that's not the important thing here. The important thing is God is governing what is happening here. And as indeed he is in control over everything in our lives today, for our good, which we're told in Romans is ultimately conforming us to the image of his Son. Now in verses 4 to 18, what we see is this incredible and unexpected kindness from someone who we might not expect to see it from, a mighty man of wealth, Boaz, towards Ruth, and this is a reflection of the Lord's kindness to Naomi and her family. So just let us note a few things in these verses. Firstly, as it turns out, Boaz is actually a good guy, in spite of the fact that he's a mighty man of wealth. Because in the Bible and in our world today, most really wealthy people are not involved in caring for the needy. Of course, there are exceptions. But even the Salvos find this. They get much more support from suburbs like Craigieburn and Sunshine than Hawthorne and Toorak. And the first thing we notice is the first thing Boaz says. In verse 4, he says to his harvesters, "The Lord be with you." We have an early hint here that this is a genuinely godly person who takes the Lord seriously and is well respected by his workers. We also need to notice in verse 6 how Ruth is referred to by the other Israelites. She is simply, the Moabite, who came back with Naomi. And just in case we miss it, she's just the Moabite who came back from Moab. See, to the Israelites, the Moabites were inferior, ignorant idol worshippers. And what the hell's she doing here anyway? In contrast to this is Boaz's attitude in verses 8 and 9. Again, this is almost inexplicable generosity and kindness. Firstly, he says, "My daughter." He then proceeds to tell her, "Look, stay in my field." And he has taken measures to protect her from being molested. And she is welcome to a drink anytime she likes. See, in verse 10, Ruth acknowledges that this is extraordinary and unexpected. And she bows down and says, basically what she says, to put it in language that we're more familiar with, is, "Why have I found such amazing grace? Why have I found such favour and generosity in your eyes?" See, we don't really get this, but this is completely unexpected. But verses 11 and 12 are very important here. Boaz is acknowledging her faith, which will give her an inheritance among those who belong to God. See, Ruth is doing all that she's doing for Naomi because she has faith in the Lord. Remember in chapter 1, Ruth could have returned to her own family where she would have had more definite prospects of marriage and food and protection. But her primary concern was that she wanted to be included in the promises of the true and living God, no matter what it cost her personally. And as part of that, it literally says she clung to Naomi. In fact, the language describing Ruth here by Boaz is deliberately put in terms of Abraham, who left land and family to go to a place that he did not know. Boaz is, in a way, acknowledging you have faith, the faith of Abraham. And what is absent to here, notice, is anything about Ruth's appearance. See, some people want to cast this book of Ruth as some sort of romance. But what we'll find when we get to chapter 4 is the Hebrew verb love is used once in the book of Ruth, and it's used to describe Ruth's love for Naomi. There's nothing said here about Ruth's appearance. And at this point, any romantic attachment that Boaz might have. See, from Boaz's perspective, the text wants to emphasize to us, it's all about her faith and corresponding character. And Boaz wants to see that rewarded. Boaz is praying in verse 12 that Ruth will see that it's more than worthwhile to trust in the Lord, that the safest place to be in the world is under the shelter of his wings. And he wants to facilitate that. He wants to be an agent of this kindness of God. And of course, this idea of taking shelter under the wings is an image from the way some birds protect their chicks. A hen will gather her chickens and make sure they are all safe and secure under her wings. So will God act towards those who look to him. And Ruth is acknowledging again this unnatural kindness of Boaz. It literally says here, "You have spoken to the heart," which is a bit stronger than just kindly. And because Boaz was a godly man, he wanted to see her rewarded, and he was doing what he could to contribute to that. See, Boaz, notice here, went beyond the requirements of the law. What did the law require? The law required that he just not go over his harvest twice. and that Ruth be able to glean the leftover grain. What he's saying is actually pull out some stalks and give them to her. Come here and have lunch. Have a drink whenever you like. See, this is a man of true faith. This is a man not just doing the minimum requirements of the law. He's embodied the purpose and function of the law. See, he's a shining of example of true faith and obedience to the Lord's covenant against a dim background of unfaithfulness in the time of the judges. We also see verses 14 to 18 that he did even more to help her. And by doing this, Boaz is demonstrating a concern that this faithful person be well provided for. Boaz demonstrates the fruit of true faith. And it's needless to say, isn't it, that our world needs to see that. The demonstration of true faith, not just talk about it. See, we're good at analysing and thinking about things, but how we live is where the rubber really meets the road. And what Boaz is demonstrating here is a lavish generosity and kindness. It's almost an unnatural generosity. It's certainly unexpected in this situation. And in the next few verses, Ruth returns to Naomi, who responds by saying that the Lord has not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead. As Chris explained last time, this word kindness in Hebrew is the word chesed, which is very hard to translate into other languages because it is so inseparably connected to the specific nature of Yahweh's kindness to his people, at this point Israel. And this is part of the theme in Ruth and the Judges, that the promises of Abraham be realised in spite of Israel. See, ultimately God's promises will be realised because of who he is, not because of us. In fact, in spite of us sometimes. He is faithful to his covenant promises in such a way that this incredible generosity and kindness is revealed and expressed in tangible ways. Naomi also sees and understands that this is ultimately the kindness of the Lord through Boaz. Because also at the end of verse 20 she says, actually, Boaz is a kinsman redeemer. Of course, this needs some explanation. A kinsman redeemer is a close relative who had certain responsibilities under the Old Testament law. In Deuteronomy 25 and Leviticus 25, a kinsman redeemer was to marry the widow of his next of kin if he died before producing any sons, so that the family of the widow could continue and the property could remain in the family. When I was explaining this at Mafra, there was a few people there converted from unbelieving backgrounds, and they were very grateful that this no longer applies. Also, the kinsman redeemer was to buy the property of the next of kin if they fell into debt and had to sell. Again, so the property would remain in the family. This way, the property stayed in the immediate family and could be easily recovered at a later date. So a kinsman redeemer was someone who rescued their next of kin from poverty and childlessness. And in a way, that's what redeem means. It means to buy back someone or something from enslavement. In this case, enslavement to poverty and hopelessness. To help grasp this, it's interesting to see what this doesn't mean by comparing it with themes of redemption in Hollywood movies. See, in movies, typically what happens is the hero figure or heroine makes some mistakes, but get a chance later on to redeem themselves by fixing the problems they caused or making some sort of repayment for their former wickedness. But of course, the massive difference to the biblical idea is that the situation from which people need redemption aren't able to be redeemed by the people themselves. Because people in the biblical concept of redemption are helpless to do it for themselves. The main use of this word in the Bible is when a slave is purchased and released because his ransom price or his redemption price has been paid and he can now go free. It's a price he can't pay himself. So to pull this all together a bit, we just need to think about how we read this narrative and narratives of the Bible generally. When we read historical accounts that are recorded in the scriptures, we need to recognise the role of various characters and the function of the narrator. The narrator in biblical accounts shares the all-knowingness of God in a way. The narrator can offer the right perspective, because he can even record what God is thinking. So when the narrator makes an assessment, he's offering a true assessment. However, when various characters make judgments or decisions or do things, they do so as fallen human beings who don't always have a full grasp of what is going on or how to understand things properly. Sometimes we have characters who are just unreliable and their perspective cannot be trusted at all. At other times we have characters who get it right and the narrator endorses their actions and perspective. So it's important to look at this passage and think about how different characters see this situation. Now, Naomi has partially got it right. She understands now that it was wrong to leave the Promised Land, wrong for her sons to marry Moabite women, and that God is sovereign over what happened to her, and that in a sense she has been disciplined. But not until later in this passage does she see that in all this there is still God's kindness and bigger purpose. That all the way through this, God is still showing kindness to her. That no situation is beyond his redemptive reach. That even our mistakes and sins can be redeemed by him. We also need to consider how confusing this might have been for Boaz. See, Boaz knew the law well. So what should he do? He has this Moabite woman working in his field who is a relative of his relative Naomi. He knows that the law says Moabites should not be allowed in the assembly of the Almighty for 10 generations. And this comes from the fact that on the way to the Promised Land, the Moabites tried to curse Israel. And when they failed, they then seduced them to worshipping their gods with an orgy-style worship service. But on the other hand, when we look at his assessment of Ruth, he can see that she left these gods of Moab to find shelter under the wings of Yahweh, the God of Jacob, and that she has demonstrated character that reflects this profession of faith. So what should he do? Because she has abandoned apparently better prospects in her own land and people to come to a situation of poverty to have to glean grain. And being a foreigner to look after a bitter old mother-in-law. There's a few jokes that come to mind at the moment which I'll refrain from. See, this is no small thing that Ruth has done, and Boaz can see that. And Boaz, rightly, according to the narrator later on in Ruth, has weighed the law correctly. he has made absolutely the right call. He has discerned the lesser and important aspect of what applies here from the law of God. This ban on Moabites clearly does not apply to Ruth, who has abandoned these gods to deliberately and purposefully live under the shelter of the wings of Yahweh and embrace the promises to Abraham. He sees that his delight in the law of God in these circumstances requires him to show kindness and care for the foreigner and widow, particularly because she clearly exhibits decisive characteristics of what the law requires. And think of it from Ruth's perspective. She perceives that she does not completely belong here. But yet, there is a sense in which she knows that she does, because she has perceived that the Lord's purposes are big and gracious. And the Lord has confirmed this to her via Boaz, this mighty man of wealth, who surprisingly also happens to be very godly and generous, and whose field she happened to find herself in. And of course, his being impressed with Ruth's faith and character starts developing and merging into his being impressed with her generally as a godly woman. Now, this is a nice story, but don't be tempted by the niceness of this story to neglect to see just how godly Boaz and Ruth are here in these circumstances. They are extraordinary characters against the background of the judges. These people exemplify the powerful nature of God's kindness and his capacity to redeem people. See, for many Israelites, that Ruth, or as she's referred by all of them in this account, the Moabite, is an ancestor of the Messiah, sticks in the throat, as grace sometimes does, not unlike the Good Samaritan. And the Pharisees at the time of Jesus had this issue. Jesus accuses them of not being able to discern between the lesser and greater priorities of the law. They magnified some smaller aspects of the law, way out of proportion, and neglected absolutely essential things, like generosity, kindness, and mercy. That is why they had no hope of seeing Jesus' glory, because he was so different to them, in that he understood the priorities of the law perfectly. So if you have unresolved relational issues and are trying to justify that theologically, or you are using the Bible to excuse showing disdain and hatred to certain people, then your theology is really messed up. Or if you think love of money takes priority over investing in people and gospel priorities, and you're using a couple of favourite verses taken out of context to uphold that, your understanding of the Bible is messed up. See, if our understanding of the Bible is not, and our knowledge of the Lord Jesus is not directing our life towards care, kindness, compassion, and love, then what's going on? Will we believe in the God of Ruth and Boaz, who governs things to achieve good? No one here will be Ruth or Boaz. Nor will God do exactly what he did for and through them. But he is the same God, and this is the nature of his modus operandi. The other thing we cannot but notice here is that all this kindness that is being displayed against the morally chaotic background of the time of the judges is ultimately only a pale shadow of the kindness of God himself. See, it's a shame, isn't it, that it takes us so long to see just how kind God is to people who look to him. And I say this reasonably often of late because I think I'm beginning to grasp it more, but if God takes away something from us so that we can have something better, that's not lack of kindness. If God takes away our idols to give us more of his Son, that is God not ceasing to show kindness. See, Jesus saves us from the great Australian dream because it's such a small and idolatrous dream. And of course, a big theme introduced in this passage, and one that some would say is the most important theme in Ruth, is the idea of redemption and kinsman redeemer. See, redemption is about the incredible kindness of the Lord, his willingness to redeem people from their sins, mistakes, and foolishness, their poor priorities and wandering desires. See, it's no coincidence that the concept of taking shelter under the wings of God is used at least twice in the account of Ruth. You may have heard this illustration before, but it's valuable in this context. Once a fire went through the buildings of a farm, and afterwards the farmer was walking around to see the damage, and he saw a dead burnt hen, and as farmers do, he gave it a bit of a kick, and from underneath the charred body scurried a few small chickens, still alive and unscathed. See, the hen had gathered her chicks and sacrificed herself to keep the chicks alive. And of course, the ultimate redeeming action of God in Christ was to take the fires of God's judgment in his own death to give redeeming life to his people by rescuing us from the horrors and enslavement of our sin. God has purchased people back for himself. And what happens is, those who know and believe in this redemption then want to become like the one who redeemed them. We are given a heart to want others to know the Redeemer and his redemption, to be agents of God's kindness and mercy in the lives of others. And at the end of chapter 2, when it says that Ruth stayed with her mother-in-law, this is not just a description setting the stage for the next scene. This is a reminder that this is what Ruth chose to do. Where Pip grew up, there was this guy who never left an area the size of West Gippsland, never married to look after aging parents on the family dairy farm, and so on and so on. He wouldn't say this himself, but when you talk to him, you basically get the impression that most of his major life choices were on the basis of what's good for other people. No doubt he is now enjoying the fruit of that in glory. But this is what's going on here with Ruth. She is just faithfully committing herself to the shelter of the Lord's wings and acting like him. And usually this won't be in spectacular ways, but in everyday, ongoing ways, just as with both Boaz and Ruth. It's amazing, isn't it, that Ruth and Boaz, apparently non-spectacular actions of kindness in some field near Bethlehem 3,000 years ago, in showing faithfulness to foreigners, made them literally human ancestors of the Lord Jesus Christ. And in a way, they are few of the fitting ancestors, in that they, to a large degree, bear the family resemblance, as we are indeed all called to do. So Ruth returned with Naomi to the promised land of God's favour. And what did they find when they returned? They found that there is a Redeemer. And a Redeemer whose kindness is inexplicable, extraordinary, and cannot be exhausted or fully apprehended.